Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Gary, Indiana, and his career in journalism spans 35 years. He was NBC's White House correspondent for 6 years and was the lead anchor slash reporter for WDIV for 19. He and our own Paul W. Smith have co-hosted a series of telecasts entitled Bridging the Racial Divide. He's also the director of communications for the DMC. His name, Emory King. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to the award-winning career journalist, our own Emory King. Emory, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, Jack, it is my honor to be with you.
So, can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in Gary, Indiana. My dad is going to be 91 years old this summer in August. He is in great health. He was a carpenter and is a retired carpenter. My mom, who passed away a few years back, was a school teacher. They were both from New Orleans, Louisiana, as are my two older siblings. And my dad moved north because there was more work in the north, and especially in Gary, Indiana, back in the mid 40s, just after the war. And so that's how it is that I came to be born in Gary, Indiana.
What did you learn from your mom, and what have you learned from your dad?
Well, I learned everything from both of them. My mom was a reading teacher, and she instilled in me a love of books, respect for people. My dad, I think, just instilled in me all of those principles of hard work, of looking a man in the eye, and of just, you know, being and as trying to be as honest a person as I could be. My dad always taught me that it wasn't it was more important what I thought of others than what others thought of me. So, not to let what I thought people might think about me or say about me have any kind of a negative impact on me or discourage me from doing what it is that I set my sights on. He always said it was more important what you think of others. So just go about your way, hold your head up high, do what you need to do, be a man, be honest, give an honest day's work, and expect an honest day's pay. We had jobs. When I was growing up, we had jobs at a very young age, Jack. I had my first job, outside of home because you know, I had chores from the age of seven on. But when I was about 13 or so, I got my first job in a drugstore as a stock boy, and I've been working ever since. I need a break.
So Duggan gives you a break every week, you said.
I don't know about that.
When we were kids, somebody who was 55, 60, 65, that was old. Now we're watching our parents live to be in their 90s.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, they say old is 15 years beyond where you are. You're right. But we are living longer. We have some of us are blessed with good genes. I mean, my mom lived to 89, and she was in pretty good health. She had breast cancer at one point in her life and beat it, and went on to live about 10 or 12 years beyond that. And my dad is, like I said, he's 90 years old. He's in great health. He swims. He walks. He drives. He's very independent. And I guess it's because he exercised all of his life in the course of his work in construction and as a carpenter. He eats well. He doesn't eat fried foods. He's very mindful of that. But more importantly, he's very mindful about having something to do with his mind and with his time. He has his little projects he still works on around the house in the winter when the weather is bad, and then as soon as the sun comes out in the spring, he's out in the yard working on his flower garden and growing a few tomatoes and peppers and that sort of thing. So he's always doing something that keeps him mentally alert and fresh, and he takes pretty good care of himself.
When you were growing up in Gary, Indiana, you studied classical music. There were not many kids in Gary, Indiana studying classical music. How'd that ever come about?
Well, there may have been more kids than you might imagine in Gary studying classical music. There were some pretty, it came about, where do I start this story? It came about, to give you the direct short answer, because my sister took piano lessons, and my older sister took piano lessons, and I got the idea in my head that I wanted to learn how to play the piano like she was playing the piano. I don't know if it was a competitive thing at the time, but so when I was 8 years old, I was allowed to take piano lessons. She took piano lessons from an incredible man who taught music in Detroit, in Gary. The interesting thing about Gary in those years, Jack, and this is kind of a longer version of that story, is that Gary mirrored Detroit in many ways. It was a sort of like a miniature Detroit. It was the all-American city. And I remember in 1956, when I was 8 years old, they had the Golden Jubilee in Gary. It was the 50th anniversary of the founding of the city of Gary, which was founded in 1906 on the shores of Lake Michigan. And it was a very integrated, fun place to grow up. It had a significant black community, and of course there was segregation, and there were the usual issues having to do with race. But the black community in Gary was very cohesive, and all of my role models growing up were there. My minister, my doctor, our lawyers. There were teachers. And this piano teacher, this man named Dr. Whittemore, who was educated at the University of Chicago and who could have been a classical concert pianist in his own right, but decided that there was more of a need for him to be in Gary, his hometown, teaching young little knuckleheads like me. And so that's what he did. So he stuck with me through some pretty difficult years. And there came a point when I was, a few years down the line when I decided I didn't want to take piano lessons anymore because I wanted to go outside and play sports and do some other things. And he and my dad somehow got together behind my back and conspired and decided that no, you were going to stick with this. You weren't going to give it up. You could do both. But the important thing was to learn the discipline of practice and of finishing a job and finishing a project. And so I stuck with it and came out the other end in my later teen years, very, very grateful that I had done that. So I was fortunate to take piano lessons all the way from the age of 8 all the way through high school and into college.
When we come back, we'll ask Emory King how he ever got into radio and TV. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Emory King. Emory, you graduate from Indiana University, and then you go to Chicago and you get a job with a radio station in Chicago. How'd that happen?
Well, I got to clear you up. I didn't graduate from Indiana. I'm a college dropout. And the way it happened was my last year in school, I don't know now how many hours I had to complete my degree, 12 or 15 hours, I got a job part-time in radio, which developed into a full-time job because I enjoyed it so much, and I consequently ended up in radio reporting and spent my first 7 years in radio. And so I left school to go pursue this career because I didn't see where I was learning more in school at that point than I was learning on the job about radio. I was doing quite a few things in radio back in those years. And so that led to a job in Chicago at WBBM, this all-news radio station in Chicago. And so that's kind of where I started. And again, after 7 years, that led to a transition into television in Chicago, and the emphasis was on politics back in those years. I covered politics in those years in Chicago, and you know what politics was like in Chicago, Jack. That was when Mayor Daley was the father was in charge. The boss was in charge in those years, and then in the subsequent years, his replacements, Michael Balandic, yes, and Mayor Jane Byrne, and then eventually Harold Washington, who was in the state legislature when I covered him in the state legislature. But by the time he became mayor, I had moved on.
Vote early and vote often.
Vote early and vote often. Exactly.
1980, yeah. You go to Washington, D.C., you get a job with NBC as their TV White House correspondent, and you're there for 6 years. Talk about that experience.
Well, that was, things were moving fast in those years. After 1 3-year contract at WBBM-TV in Chicago and local television news, I was offered this opportunity to move to Washington, and so we moved to Washington on St. Patrick's Day, 1980, actually, and got there, and it was a very interesting time to get there, because that was during the time of the Iran hostage crisis, if you'll remember, which happened in December 1979, and so many correspondents, network correspondents, were either over in Iran or focused on that story, and it was also an election, a presidential election year, and so others were out on the campaign trail. So that gave me an opportunity to go in, do some general assignment, move around to the different beats in Washington, the Pentagon, the House, the Senate, the White House, and kind of get to know the city and get a taste for the atmosphere in national news reporting, and get on the air, and that was the name of the game. You had to get on the air. And so I got on the air quite a bit, and then settled into the White House, where I was assigned to be a correspondent with Andrea Mitchell, who is their foreign affairs correspondent today, and also Chris Wallace. And the three of us were the television correspondents for NBC. And President Reagan, of course, was elected in 1980, and I spent those years there traveling around the world with the Reagan administration and covering the Reagan administration policies. It was a very heady time in my career. It was incredibly interesting.
Can you share with us two great President Reagan stories?
Well, you know, you ask tough questions, Jack, and of course, you know, I'm not sure that I can remember anything that's really going to qualify as a great President Reagan story, but I'll share this with you. He was a very, very kind man, and you know, you got the sense that he had an overview of what he wanted to do, where he wanted the country to go, and how he wanted things carried out. He was smart enough not to get caught in bogged down in detail, which I think was probably the problem with President Jimmy Carter during his administration. President Reagan stayed above it all, but he had the general sense and the general knowledge of how he wanted this administration run, and said, here are the principles, here are the objectives, here's where I want to go. You guys go out and make it happen. He was a very, very funny man. He told great stories. He was extremely personable. The twinkle that you may have detected in his eye on TV was always there, and the great thing is that we had opportunities on a personal one-on-one level to interact every year in Santa Barbara, where we would spend the month of August. During the Christmas season, when we would go to Palm Springs with him, there would be these receptions and opportunities, you know, to be in a social setting with the president without the cameras, where you could chat with he and with the first lady. And so so those are my favorite memories of President Reagan. He was just a very warm and kind man.
How do you explain, Emory, when he passed, that outpouring of love throughout this country for that whole week?
I think that genuine feeling, that genuine sense of the man that I just inarticulately attempted to relate to you, came through to Americans. I think there was a need for someone to be a leader in this country. There was a need to at least have the sense that there was someone in charge who was going to make a decision. Whether you agreed with his policies or not, you had to know that this was someone who could rally the troops, someone who could lead. And I think that that's the feeling, and that's the sense that came through to Americans. I mean, it was the all-American story, Eureka, Illinois, and win one for the Gipper and all of that, the Hollywood image. But I think there was also a realization that there was substance there and that there was a genuine love for this country. And I think that's what came through. And I think Americans missed that. I'm not sure that we have, at least to the degree that the Reagan administration, that President Reagan himself, I should say, engendered that feeling. I'm not sure that we've had it since.
Started in the radio as a Chicago Cubs announcer.
He did, and that does bring to mind a funny story. Maybe you've heard it. He used to tell it often about how back in the early years when he was announcing these games, they would announce these games by ticker tape. Have you ever heard that story? So he'd sit up, I guess they'd sit in a studio, and they'd have a Western Union ticker tape coming through, and he would, as the game went on, somebody would wire the result. And so he'd sit in the studio and say, you know, and the batter is up, and he hits a line drive to right field, and he's going around, or whatever, and that's the way he would announce the games. And so one day he's announcing the game, and the machine went out. It wasn't working. And so he's sitting there making up the play-by-play. And so, I mean, I can't relate the story, but, yeah, he called baseball play-by-play, and he was, of course, a union organizer. He was head of the, I don't know if it was the Screen Actors Guild or the big union out in Hollywood. So before he became governor of California, he had a varied career. Also, I would also share with you, Jack, that Nancy Reagan was a very interesting person too. Very kind lady. You know, I had the opportunity to cover her quite a bit, and she was really dedicated to him. Loved him.
We're talking to Emory King. When we come back, we'll find out how did he ever come to Detroit. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Emory King, who in 1986 becomes the lead anchor and reporter for WDIV here in Detroit. Emory, how'd that ever come about?
Well, I decided, once I decided to leave network news and come back to local television news, there was an opportunity and an opening here in Detroit at the Post Newsweek owned station. The Washington Post Newsweek magazine owns Channel 4, WDIV. It was a man named Jim Snyder in Washington who was the vice president of news for the television stations that Post Newsweek owned, who kind of shepherded that deal and put me in touch with a man here, Bob Warfield, who was the news director at Channel 4, a lady named Amy McCombs was the general manager. And between the three of them, they made me an offer and made me feel very, very welcomed here in Detroit and said that there was a need for me and here. And my wife and I were looking to move back to the Midwest. There wasn't an opportunity in Chicago, but it was close to home. So we settled in Detroit, and I mean, I didn't know anything about Detroit at the time, but it represented a good opportunity for us to roll up our sleeves and become involved in a community and make a contribution to it, and so that's how I ended up at Channel 4.
You went from one legendary figure, Ronald Reagan, to another, Coleman Young.
I got to tell you, I really enjoyed Coleman Young more than I enjoyed Ronald Reagan, because first of all, I got to see him and talk to him. And, you know, you very rarely get to speak to the president on a professional basis in terms of the story that you're covering. And Coleman Young was just an incredible leader for this city. He was just a kick. And I remember the very first time that I jumped into a crowd and threw my microphone in his face and asked him a question. And he stopped and he turned and he looked across the crowd. I'm standing there with my arm extended holding out the microphone. And he looks across and he says, "Who the hell are you?" And that was his answer to my first question. So I just figured, well, this is going to be a downhill ride from here. But actually, we ended up having a very warm relationship.
We're talking to Emory King, who was an award-leading commentator for us for 19 years and then one day gets fired. We'll ask him about that. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Emory King, who after 19 years at WDIV, one day in 2005, gets fired. The community's in an uproar. Articles written, people screaming, protesting. And Emory, you have never spoken out. Why?
Who was screaming? Were you screaming, Jack? I know you were screaming. Everybody asks, well, so what happened? Why did you get fired? And my answer is always the same. They fired me, so go ask them. Nobody has ever asked Alan Frank, the general manager and at Channel 4, why I got fired. So Joe Berwanger, who was the general manager at the time. And so I would suggest that you go ask Host Newsweek why I got fired.
How did you get through it, Emory?
Well, I got through it with the help and support first and foremost of my family, my wife, and my daughter, who were just rocks, pillars of strength for me during that period. We got through on our faith, on the knowledge that I had done the very best job that I could do, that I had used the position of and the medium of television in this community as responsibly as I could to report on the issues that impact the quality of the lives of all of us who live in Southeast Michigan every single time I looked into that camera and reported on a story. I knew what I had done, and I knew that I had done it correctly. And so, how bad were things going to be for me in that regard? I just think that if you do the right thing, ultimately you win out. So, that's how I got through it. I got through it with the support and the help of a lot of friends and understanding of so many people who have lifted my spirits, and all of those people that you mentioned who in the metropolitan area who wrote letters to as people like Donald Graham, the chairman of Post Newsweek in Washington, D.C. A lot of letters went to him, phone calls, people who turned off television, people who said that, you know, television news, it just, what your dismissal underscored many things that seem to be wrong with television news today. People who called me and offered their support. So it was all of that. It was a combination of all of that, Jack. I when I left, I'd never been fired in 35 years, and all of a sudden I'm walking out and I've been fired. And oddly enough, I felt very, very calm about it when I left the station that day. I felt it was almost eerie, and I thought, why is it that I feel almost giddy? I felt like a great weight had been released from me. So that's how I got through it.
Today, a lot of people in the automotive sector are facing a career change, uncertainty. You know, life is a series of chapters, and they've had this glorious chapter, and suddenly now they have to start a new chapter. What advice and encouragement would you give them?
Well, I mean, I think everyone has to draw on their own sense of a higher power, whatever that is to people. I don't presume to think or to believe that everyone has to have the same set of beliefs and worship the same way. But I think certainly for me, I'm not going through this life alone. There is a higher power that I call on and that I rely on, and so I think that's the first thing you have to do. Secondly, I think you have to just realize that I think when it's the old cliche, when one door closes, there are other opportunities, bigger doors open, and just stick to it, stay positive in your attitude, be kind, be forthright, and you'll persevere. Good things will happen.
You know, as we had breakfast a week or so ago and we were prepping for this, and you told me that story, about losing the job and that peacefulness that you left with, I went back and got Footprints in the Sand, the poem by Mary Stevenson.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So I said to the Lord, you promised me, Lord, that if I followed you, you'd walk with me always. But I've noticed that during the most trying periods in my life, there have only been one set of footprints in the sand. Why, when I needed you the most, you've not been there for me? And the Lord replied, quote, the times when you've seen only one set of footprints in the sand is when I carried you. Very true.
I'm so happy that you found that. That is so meaningful to me. And I think that that's the best thing to tell people when they're losing their jobs and they're facing these adversities in life. Many times, I mean, you may not realize it, but you really are being carried and supported. And there really is a reason for everything. And sometimes the plan that is in place for you is something that you aren't able to see or figure out until way, way down the road. So you just have to have faith that plan is in place and that it's being worked out for you.
Any young listener tonight that's thinking about a career in journalism, what advice would you give them?
Well, I think I think you have to read. You have to read as much as you can about as many things as you can, and develop a sense of curiosity about the world around you. But today, I think what you also have to do is make yourself aware of and try to keep up with the changes in the telecommunications industry. This whole business of mass media is changing so fast. Television news, for example, is losing viewers. Newspapers are losing readers because there are new avenues for content delivery now. There's the internet, and the new iPhone is out, and all of these new delivery systems are available, and so it's going to change the way information is disseminated. So it is very, very important to make yourself aware of these changes. And then the old standards apply, Jack. I think you have to find someone and try to meet someone who is doing what it is that you want to do, develop and search for mentors, learn from them, watch them, get as much education as you possibly can to prepare yourself. And then begin knocking on doors and have faith in yourself. Also, don't rule out the idea of becoming an independent agent or an independent producer in these days. It's not like you have to go to work for someone. Maybe you're the one who can start your own thing and develop it and take it somewhere else. So that would be the advice.
What makes a truly great journalist, Emery?
I think the standards never change, regardless of the medium, regardless of the delivery system for the information. I think that you have to be committed to educating, informing, and engaging the public on issues that are compelling to a community. If you commit yourself to that set of standards in your training and in the application, you will become a very effective journalist, and you will work, and you will also in the process help to uplift the community around you and make it a better place. I've never been one who thought that this was an adversarial role that the press played. We are not apart from the problem looking at it. We are a part of the solution. So in a democracy, that's the way a free press is designed to work. So become a part of the solution by working to uplift the community through the application of a free press.
We're talking to Emery King, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Emery King, who, with our own Paul W. Smith, have been co-hosting a series of telecasts entitled Bridging the Racial Divide. Emery, how'd that ever come about?
Well, that came about because my wife and I have a production company, Kingberry Productions, and after I left Channel 4, we decided to develop a series of programs addressing the impact of race in Southeast Michigan, which all grew out of the 2000 census. Report that showed that we are the most segregated metropolitan region in the country. And as a result of that, we are at a competitive and economic disadvantage with other metropolitan regions around the country in terms of in terms of city development, regional transportation, health care, housing costs. It's a whole array of areas, and that it was time that we use, again, the medium of television to begin to rally people to talk about this and engage themselves in the dialogue. And so we entered into an arrangement with Detroit Public Television and a number of people who came to the fore and put their money down to underwrite it, like National City Bank, our premier underwriter, and Dave Bing, Roger Pinsky, the Masco Foundation, and some other folks who were kind enough to do this. And so we've been reporting in a series of programs on this issue of race in Southeast Michigan. We've done three and are in the process of preparing for a fourth one sometime next fall.
These three, what have they taught you as far as the key to us meeting this challenge?
Well, all of them have taught me that it is more important than ever that we talk, that we at least talk about it, and that we acknowledge that the problem exists, that we develop a realization that although we may be far apart on this issue, and there may be huge areas of misunderstanding, the only way that we're ever going to begin to understand each other and address some of these problems is to sit down and acknowledge that the problem exists and that there is a need to engage in a dialogue on it. Also understanding and respecting that there will be differences of opinion, but the differences that we have should not preclude our being able to speak respectfully to each other on as humans on this issue and make some progress on it. So that's what I've learned, and I think that there is a reluctance for people to do that, but I think we're making some inroads, and I think an increasing number of people are beginning to realize that, and as difficult as it may be, are wanting to sit down and become more involved and engaged.
Almost 2 years ago, in August of 2005, you joined the DMC as the Director of Communications.
Right.
What's your role with the DMC?
Well, my role with the DMC is to produce videos to tell the story of these incredible breakthrough medical procedures that are available and being offered to patients at the Detroit Medical Center and its nine institutions. The research that is carried out at medical schools, fine medical schools like the Wayne State University School of Medicine, and are then applied bedside by the residents and the surgeons from the medical school at Wayne State, some of the finest in the country, quite literally, is really astounding, Jack. So that nexus of technology and medical care is yielding these miraculous procedures. Laparoscopic and endoscopic procedures where that have eliminated the need for large incisions and thereby reduced the risk of infection from those decisions, high medication, longer hospital stays. So now you're able for many procedures to go in and undergo minimally invasive procedures, get out of the hospital the day of the procedure or the next day, with practically no incision, very, very small incisions, less medication, less risk of injury, and then you're able to recover quicker and go back to your regular lifestyle sooner. So we develop these stories for the Detroit Medical Center website, dmc.org, so that you can go on to dmc.org and see for yourself what patients are experiencing in the operating room and what is being offered at the Detroit Medical Center's nine institutions and with these wonderful surgeons who are just the very, very best at what they do in all areas of surgery, neurology, cardiology, oncology, general surgery, thoracic surgery, orthopedic surgery, a whole host of areas. It's been quite challenging for me to do, and actually it's been the most fulfilling point of my career yet.
You've been in Detroit for 21 years. We are an extremely giving community. How do you explain that, Emory?
Well, that we are a giving community?
Yes, in regard, the non-for-profits, we're always there for every cause. The money raised is unbelievable.
Well, it is, and it, you know, what's even more unbelievable about it is that, you know, I used to hear Mayor Young always say, you know, in Detroit, when the nation catches a cold, economically, Detroit catches pneumonia, and we've, as you know, we've gone through periods of recession, and look at what's happening to us now. We're, it's been hard. I mean, we're largely considered a blue-collar, work ethic kind of town, yet people are very, very generous and very giving, and I think that that's that underscores the primary reason why I so much enjoy and consider myself blessed to be in Detroit, because the people in Detroit are the kindest people of any place that I've ever been. I think they have good hearts. I think they're very well-meaning. I think they're compassionate. And I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. I'm just very, very grateful that that I live in a place where there are so many well-meaning people. And that's why I'm so encouraged that we can surmount these problems having to do with race and all of the other problems that face us in Southeast Michigan. We've got good people.
They say that in business today, in life today, every day is a tryout. You know, your career for 35 years, every story is a new story. Talk about viewing each day as a tryout.
You're as good as your last story. Well, viewing each day as a tryout. I mean, the way I look at it, Jack, is every day you're blessed to have the opportunity to get up and go out into the world and see what you can create to make it a better place. And that really is what it comes down to. I guess I don't look at it as a tryout as much as I do as well. And maybe it's one and the same. I mean, maybe it's semantics here. I look at it as an opportunity to do something that was even more fulfilling and more fun than yesterday. How can I build on what it was that I did yesterday? And so that's kind of the way I look at things. It's just a blessing for me to be able to go out and say, gosh, today I'm going to be in an operating room with a surgeon who is going to fix somebody's heart, and somebody who otherwise might die tomorrow, but he is going to be able to employ all of the wonders that technology allows to do it. It's a great opportunity.
Last question, 1 minute. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
One of the things that really disappointed me in 1981, when I came to Detroit to work on a documentary, an NBC white paper on black youth unemployment, Garrett Cutley and I did this piece. I interviewed a young man, a young black kid, and asked him if he had any, what did he dream about doing? And he said, I don't have any dreams. And I always thought that was the saddest thing, because I think this kid's dreams had been taken away from him because he didn't realize, he wasn't allowed to realize opportunities. I would encourage youngsters to dream their dreams and to realize that they can achieve them if they work as hard as they possibly can, but to also know that there are forces, and to be very honest with them, that there are forces that are working and are in place to prevent those dreams from coming true and from realizing them. So confront that squarely. Know that nothing is given to you, and that there are some things in this world that you're just going to have to take by your own stamina. But don't give up. Don't give up.
Emory King, you're a treasure of our community.
Thank you very much, Jack, and thank you so much for having me, and good luck with the great work you're doing.
God bless. Our guest next Sunday will be another amazing man, the founder of Achilles Track Club, Dick Trom. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.